I'm Larry Morrow, and this is Take Two, the radio program that looks inside a person's adventure, not so much from the outside in, but the inside out. In the next 30 minutes, you will discover the inward joy of their heart that married them to the passion of their life and the affirmation of ideals that directed their success. My interview today is centered around the most listened to voice in the world and his daughter, Carrie Kasem, who has followed in her dad, Casey Kasem's footsteps. Despite the fact that we lost Casey in June of 2014, Casey Kasem is still best known as the radio icon and the legendary voice behind America's Top 40, which left an indelible mark on pop culture throughout the world and still runs on radio stations across America and around the world. He was part of my youth growing up in Detroit and Cleveland, and not only listening to America's Top 40 Countdown, but listening to his voice on Scooby-Doo cartoons. Casey's daughter, Carrie Kasem, has turned out to be a multimedia personality herself as producer and writer. Carrie has anchored music, talk, and entertainment programs for radio and television. And this year, can't believe this, marks her 21st year in the business, Carrie. How about that?
It's actually 23, Larry.
So in February 2010, Carrie joined Premier Radio Network for the launch of Sixth Sense with Nikki Sixx and the sideshow Countdown. Soon after her exit from Sixth Sense, Kasem joined Gurvey's Law on 790 KABC. Well, the warmest of welcomes to you, Carrie Kasem. How nice to be with you again.
I know, Larry, we finally did it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, last time you called me about 2 weeks ago and said, Larry, I can't do the interview today. I'm on my way to Haiti.
Yeah.
What was
in
Haiti?
Oh, gosh, a lot of people don't know. I didn't know until my disaster relief group called me. There was another huge earthquake in Haiti. I was there in 2010 when the earthquake happened that devastated the country, killed hundreds of thousands of people. And when they called and said, hey, we've lost, it's I think over 50,000 people. People, don't have homes. We need help. So I just dropped everything and I went out there again.
Wow. And you were there for what, a week?
I was there 10 days. It was short, but it was enough to get tents. It was enough to get, we had lots of tools we needed to get, all of our team together to start helping. And I was part of that.
Doesn't it break your heart, Carrie, when you see things like this that are happening all over the world and they seem to be happening more consistently than ever before?
Yeah, it's been, I'd say the last 10 years have been kind of scary and lots of disasters I've been on. I've been, to Mexico for the earthquake. I was in Florida for the hurricane, Texas for the hurricane twice. Rebuilding, it's been in Haiti twice. Any disaster, the fires. We were at the Woolsey Fire in California, so it just seems like, especially with the fires on the West Coast.
Carrie, do you remember when we first met?
I do. I totally remember when we first met, and I had just come from Lebanon with my father, and we went to Chicago for the awards.
Yeah, for the Broadcast Museum Award. And the way that your father and I ended up meeting was I did this 1 hour interview with him in Cleveland at the opening of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. At the end of the interview, I said, Casey, you have no idea what this means to me to be sitting with you after listening to you for all these years. And congratulations, by the way, for being inducted into the most prestigious radio hall of fame in America in Chicago, the National Radio Hall of Fame. He says, you too will be a member of this Hall of Fame. And I said, from your lips to God's ears. And that's the way that we ended our interview. Well, anyway, so here we are doing this interview with something that is so dear to your heart, your Kasem Cares Foundation. Tell me about that, Carrie.
I started that when I realized that there were no laws and no protection for adult children trying to see their elderly or sick parents. When my stepmother decided that she wasn't going to let anybody see my dad again in what was to be his last year of life, we went to the police. They did nothing. We went to Adult Protective Services. They could do nothing. And this is, this is my dad. We saw him every single week. We talked to him almost every day on the phone, and all communication was cut off. The staff was fired. We couldn't see my dad. We didn't know what was going on with my dad. She wouldn't, you know, tell us anything medically. And I thought, okay, we'll go to court. And of course we'll win in court. We're good kids, you know what? And I realized that there were no laws protecting adult children when they want to see their sick or elderly children. So I thought, at that time, I had two lawyers that told me I wasn't going to win a case against a wife of 34 years. So I thought, okay, if I'm not going to win the case, I'm going to change the law. And that's how I started the Case and Cares Foundation. It's a nonprofit that just I just learned literally as I went. We started a 501c3 and a 501c4, one for education purposes, one for lobbying purposes. And I eventually won the case 8 months after they told me I'd never win it. And I changed the law as well. So I thought, well, I can't just do this in California. I have to help, you know, people across the country with this massive epidemic, which is elder abuse and guardianship abuse. Like you hear, you know, now it's all over the news because of Britney Spears, but I've been dealing with this for 8 years.
You have been able to pass these in 12 states, California, Texas, Iowa, Utah, Louisiana, Virginia, Alabama, Wisconsin, Illinois, Arkansas, Nebraska, and Maryland, with nine yes. other states adopting a version of it to make it a total of 21 states. And I know you, Carrie Kasem, you will not finish until you have done all 50 states, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And if we can go federally, then I'm good. And we're working on federal bills right now. So if we can get it one and done, so much better. They have the patient's bill of rights. So if anybody right now can't get in to see their loved one and they're in a nursing home or a hospital, you go to the patient's bill of rights. It's up there at caseandcares.org. And it can help you see your loved one.
Carrie, along with all of your current accolades, your writings, your radio and TV programs, what is it that the most, other than this foundation, what is it that stirs your heart the most?
Oh, I'd say when I started this foundation and I didn't know what I was doing. and it was like almost divine intervention. It was like, I just started it and everybody that was meant to be in my life came into my life and helped me along the way. And I have the best team. And my stepdad, who is a lawyer and a lobbyist in Sacramento, California, he helped me. I had a representative say, hey, I want to help, you know, you with your bill. And it was just amazing how it came together and how I learned so quickly and how I went from state to state. And there was one day I was in three different states testifying.
Carrie, I remember when you came to Cleveland, you did not know that because you didn't have your ears on that day.
Yeah.
You did not know that Avery Friedman and I were in the audience.
I know. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. It was a shock. It was like cognitive dissonance because I kept looking at you guys and it didn't even hit me.
Yes. And I think what hit you is when they were taking Q&A and Avery asked the question and you said something, oh my God, there's Avery Friedman.
I did because I kept looking at you guys in the audience and it just went over my head. And then he stood up. I went, oh my gosh, that's Avery Friedman.
You know, Carrie, one of the most viewed and sad stories in American news was back in October of 2013 when Jean, Casey's wife at the time, prevented you and your brother and Casey's brother, along with other friends and colleagues from any contact with your dad. Carrie, as painful as it must be, can you take us back to the beginning of this saga, which we all saw being played out on national television news networks all across America? Painful for us, but take us back to that, Carrie.
You know, there's so many people that have heard this story and it's been rehashed a lot. I will give you, you know, the shorter version of it, but I'll tell you what I did, Larry, and I'm very proud of it. And it gave me closure and it was very cathartic in doing it was the podcast I did for Audible. It's called Bitter Blood, Kasem versus Kasem. And it has all the depositions of the caretakers, the friends, the doctors, anybody who is behind the scenes. Because I've told this story now for 8 years, and I wanted people to hear it from the people that I didn't even know, the people that saw what was happening. So I put this whole thing together with a woman named Aliza Rosen, who had the courage enough to produce it and get it out there. And it's the entire story, not just told by me, you know, it's told by everyone, including my my stepmother's right-hand man, who came out and finally told the truth, which I was very proud of him. But it really started when my dad got sick and was diagnosed in 2007 with Parkinson's, which actually turned out to be Lewy body dementia, which is what Robin Williams had and Ted Turner has. And it's a pretty horrible form of dementia. But I'll tell you the one thing, the one saving grace with that dementia is my dad always knew who we were. It was not like Alzheimer's or he'd forget. He had delusions. It affected his voice. He couldn't speak after a while. It was very hard for him to get words out. But he knew who we were. It affected his body, his mobility, and it was a horrible disease. But when he was first diagnosed, we sat my dad down and said, listen, when you get sick enough, Jean is going to keep you from us. And we knew this because she kept her family members from her mom who was dying and put her mom in my father's condo and left her with two Spanish-speaking housekeepers. And we were like, well, that's not happening to Dad. So he signed over a power of attorney of just medical, not having anything to do with money, trust, estate, nothing. So we had that power of attorney, and we had to pull it out when she would not answer our phone calls, our emails, would not let us see our dad. In the very beginning, she said, your dad, the dad's driver is sick. Oh, the dad's driver's mom is sick. Oh, he had to go to Las Vegas. But as you will hear in the podcast on Audible, that was all lies. And the driver's mom didn't even live in Las Vegas. She was not sick. In fact, she just died very recently. So there was no truth to anything she was telling. The only person she would talk to, which was my sister. She wouldn't pick up my calls or answer any of my letters, nor my brother's. So we did everything we could to try and see my dad. And that's when I finally, after a couple months, I said, I'm going to get all my dad's friends together. I'm going to get all my dad's family together, as many as I can, my dad's coworkers. And we're going to stand out in front of my dad's house with signs saying who they were, like, you know, Casey's friend of 63 years, you know, Tom Rounds was there. The people who created American Top 40, Gonzalo Venecia, his right-hand man of 27 years, his producers, his brother from Michigan, friends, family members, everybody had a sign saying who they were and that they missed my dad. And I held a sign that said, why won't you let me see my dad, Jean? And we got the cops called on us. We got helicopters up above. She had lied and said we were breaking into her house. There was a huge gate. Nobody went into the house. We just were out in front. And it started that way. But at least when the story broke, it showed that nobody could see my dad. It wasn't just stepkids against stepmom, stepmom against stepkids. It was everyone my dad knew and loved could not see him. And I couldn't get a hold of him either.
Carrie, let me interrupt just for a second. For those who have just tuned in, you're listening to a story by Carrie Kasem, the daughter of famous Casey Kasem, the story that was played out on national television. Carrie is in the middle of telling the story that appeared on national television, where she and all of her friends are standing in front of the gate of Casey's house, and Jean will not allow anybody in. Okay, Carrie, continue with the story.
Yes, and not just my friends, my dad's family members, my dad's coworkers, all of my dad's closest loved ones were there. And we just, after 2 months of not hearing from my dad, no communication, zero, we just kind of did a very quiet protest outside of his house. And the cops were called and the media was called, and that's how it broke. We thought, well, we'll shame her into letting us see our father, and that didn't work. Police didn't care, and the APS couldn't help, Adult Protective Services. So we went to court, and that's when the battle began. And I fought for 8 months, and I was told by my first two lawyers I'd never win. And I got a lawyer who believed in the case. And 8 months later, I won guardianship/conservatorship over my father. But by then, she had taken him, my stepmom had hid him in three different states, trying to hide him from us.
But originally, you were denied conservatorship over your dad, which at the time had inflicted tremendous emotional pain. But later, as you mentioned, you were granted conservatorship despite Jean's objection. Why her objection, Carrie Kasin?
Well, here's what she objected. She said that she loved my father. She would take care of him, and she would. One thing she said was so ridiculous. She would, you know, manicure his feet and cut his toenails. And when you listen to the podcast, Kasin versus Kasin, Bitter Blood, Kasin versus Kasin on Audible, you will hear from the caretakers that were there that said she never came into his room. She would barely, like every 3 days, maybe pop her head in. She was with her boyfriend the whole time. And when that got to be a nuisance, she moved my father to a condo in Malibu, away from everybody, and stopped answering the phone. So, you know, he was a nuisance to her. And this is not just coming from me anymore. This is coming from the people who were taking care of my father. She didn't take care of him. And we kept trying to explain that to the judge. But when she unhooked him at 3 a.m. From his convalescence center, unhooked his feeding tube, unhooked his IVs, put him in a wheelchair against medical advice. The nurses asked her who she was. She had never visited my dad in 3 months, so they didn't know her. And we had gotten one visit. We had gotten one visit, and that's why she pulled him out and took him to 3 different states, hiding him from us. So, I mean, when I went to court with that, and I went to court with a letter from the doctor, Dr. Paul Leitner, said what Jean, Casey's wife, did would bring him grievous harm or death. I had to prove egregious elder abuse, and I did. And that's when I won conservatorship.
Yeah, you're listening to Larry Morrow Take Two, and my very special guest is Carrie Kasin. You may know that name really well. But anyway, Case Kasin died in June of 2014, which shocked the nation. But I remember one of the stories, Carrie, is that the court ordered an investigation of his whereabouts after you left the California. The court told you that your dad was no longer in the United States, but later you found him in Washington State, critical, but in stable condition. Is that right?
Yeah, he wasn't released in stable condition. He had been taken on a car ride from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. He was only supposed to be transported by ambulance, and he was not hooked up to any feeding devices or any way to get nutrition or water into his body. They did pour some Ensure down his feeding tube, but when the doctor found him, when he went from Los Angeles, hiding in a place in Los Angeles, then hiding in a place in Las Vegas, then we think he took him to Arizona, then back. And then she flew him on a medical flight, the only time she moved him appropriately, to Washington State, trying to get him on an Indian reservation to stop any way of getting to my dad. That was thwarted. That's a whole nother story you can hear in the podcast. I had to go up there and I found him because they called when the plane landed and the ambulance driver didn't take my father straight to the hospital because he was in such a dire condition. The ambulance driver actually called Adult Protective Services and made a report on Gene. And that's how we found him, because it went into the system, went down into LA, and my PI picked it up, and I flew out there, and I had my conservatorship in my hand. And what did the state of Washington say? It's not valid here. So I had to fight all over again. Now, mind you, it took 8 months to win that conservatorship. So I did fight enough to get him, after a few weeks, into a hospital, and by then it was too late.
Carrie, when you originally met with your father in California before he was moved to Washington, were you able to communicate with him, say, Dad, is everything okay? If Dad, do you want me to take you out of here? Is there anything that we can do for you? Did you have any conversation like that, Carrie?
It was very hard for him to process things, right? He could understand, we love you. And he would say, I love you, Angel. He wanted us to come back. He said, please come back. But we didn't want to stress him out. You know, we did tell him, Dad, we've been trying to see you. You know, we're so sorry. We're so, so sorry. Cause it had been 5 months since we'd seen him. He just left there with nobody. And it was horrible, but we didn't want to stress him out more. We could see that the hospital he was in had been taking very good care of him. His color was good. He had actually put on some weight since the time we saw him we got a couple visits with him during the trial, during the fight for him, and he looked horrible. He looked absolutely horrible. But when he was put into Berkeley East Convalescent Center, they took really good care of him. So when I walked in for the first time after months of not seeing him, he looked great. And he should not have died a few weeks later. I'll tell you what happened. You know, if you have a preemie baby and that baby needs an incubator and mom goes, I don't want him to be in an incubator, and takes baby out, and a couple weeks later the baby dies, she'd be rung up on murder charges, child abuse, child endangerment, everything. They throw the book at her. But you kill an elderly man that was taken out of his hospital, you know, in his incubator, and a few weeks later he dies, nothing happens.
Carrie, was there a point in your life and with your family that you must have said, they're trying to kill my dad?
Yeah, of course I did. We all did. It wasn't just me.
Carrie Kasem, that's what we had heard that was happening to your dad, Casey, is that Gene somehow was killing him little by little. The question is, why?
My humble opinion, she's a psychopath. You know, and now that I've been doing, I feel sorry for her. I don't even have hatred for her anymore. I feel bad for her. She could have had a family who loved her. We would have loved her. She would have had a family taking care of her and you know, our half-sister. But they don't believe, you know, when you're a psychopath or sociopath, you can't love and you can't be loved. It's really not an emotion they feel. And the reason I know, in my opinion, that she is one is doing this work for the last 7.5 years, I deal with people who are literally cut from the same cloth. They say the same things. They vilify the loved ones. They isolate. They over-medicate. They steal the estate. And that's exactly what she was planning on doing. And we know that because of, you know, all the witnesses, even the lawyers, who my father was made to change his will and estate plans in 2011. In 2009, my father couldn't even read his American Top 40 script. Don't tell me he could read a whole will and estate plan. In fact, we have the witnesses who were there with my father saying, I don't know what this is. And Jean screaming at him to sign it and telling him she's the only one that cares about him and you're going to sign this. And I mean, it was all fraud. So this is sociopathic, psychopathic behavior. And, you know, they say that, what is it? It's a pretty high number, like 1 in 5 or sociopathic, I don't know, something scary like that.
So now your father passes away in Washington. And then all of a sudden, the body, you have control of him at this point in time, do you not?
I had one day later and I would have had a permanent conservatorship over my dad. He died the day before. He died on Father's Day of that year. And he also died. And I think this was a big sign, really, Larry. I do think my dad gave me a sign. He died on World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. My father dies and we ask for an autopsy. And Jean collects the body, takes it immediately out of the hospital. And she says she's going to conduct her own autopsy, which she never completes. She never gives the doctor the medical records he needs. And there's nothing, you know, there's no cause of death on the death certificate. My dad's name is spelled wrong. She doesn't even know the names of my dad's parents. And she puts down an address for Jerusalem, that they had been living in Jerusalem for 18 years. My father's never been to Israel.
One of the greatest conversations I ever had was when I would work out in the basement of my home in Cleveland. My wife knew never to bother me. So one day she walks down, and I'm puffing and toughing around, and she hands me the phone. I said, honey, you know, I don't talk to anybody in working out. She said, it's Casey. Casey wants to talk to you. And all we did was talk about Laham Ishwe and all the good Lebanese foods that we love so much. Carrie, it's been a joy to be with you.
Oh, thank you, Larry. It's so good to talk to you again. It's been so long.
You know, the last time, I got to tell you, you may or may not remember who was at our table, but Johnny Rivers, who was accepting the posthumous induction award for Robert Smith Wolfman Jack, of course, Avery, Paul Harvey, his darling wife, Angel.
Paul Harvey was at our table?
Was at our table. And his darling wife, Angel. Jack Brickhouse, the voice of the Chicago Cubs, and his wife. Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Detroit Tigers, and Jack Buck, the voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. Are you kidding me? All of them?
Huge. I can't believe it. I must have been, this was a while ago, so I must not have listened to it. I got into Paul Harvey and his, you know, that's the rest of the story, for years. And I can't believe, I remember Jack Brickhouse very well because I became good friends with his wife. She actually came to California to see me after he passed. And we had a, I mean, that table, my God, oh my God. Legendary.
That was the Casey Kasem table. That was your dad who purchased that table, and he wanted all of his famous people at that table. And I said, I'm the least famous of all of them.
But you're Lebanese, Larry.
Well, Carrie, I love you, my friend. Thank you for sharing the story of your wonderful father, Casey. And hopefully you and I will soon get together and meet again.
That'd be wonderful.
God bless you, my friend.
You as well.
Thank you, Carrie. Until next time, do all the good you can to everyone you can, every time you can. For Take Two, I'm Larry Morrow.